Reading
over there.
chair. Do you want this chair? You're like awfully cramped on that little chair.
I think that chair. We can designate that the reading chair.
Yeah, the reading chair. That
yeah.
was my chair.
Yeah.
All right. But I get to cross your path once in a while to turn on my tape there. Maybe it needs some spray in there.
No, it needs a new cord.
Okay. All right, hang on. I need you to announce page number and time and day of the universe and all that. Go.
We did that at the beginning. Now we're on a different tape. Go ahead.
We're on Emergent Life, page 383, titled Dr. Wood Baker Overture. Starts with number 18.
Why does it start with 18?
Because the overture goes on and on and on through
so
the.
So you could technically take all these overture pages out and have a little mini booklet, right?
Right.
That's what,
that's what
they
she's
plan
doing.
To do.
So that all the numbers will match up then.
They do match up.
Seriously, like any
tasters?
Like some coffee?
No, I got some, thank you.
I can't do coffee.
You don't drink coffee?
Oh no, I love coffee. I'm just not drinking much of it.
You want to share?
I'm sharing.
Okay, let's go on.
Everyone enters into life. Everyone enters life with an exciting journey in mind and body, and frequently surrenders it little by little. It seldom is lost at a single turn or situation. Each decision in life, whether large or small, directs you along or away from what is special for you. Typo.
Yep, got it.
And many grievous events, such as death of a loved one and sickness or illness, loss, typo, of possessions, frequently guide you to again find your own chosen pathway and journey. Number 19. Please do not go astray or be misled from your journey, enrichment, and well-being. Lest you lead a life of longing or quiet desperation, with feelings of loss, unfulfillment, or failure. A life without true meaning and purpose, or without realizing your beauty and happiness, and your role in the universe. Number 20. Confusion and uncertainty or emptiness are sure signs of loss of your eternal abiding self, and loss of your inner vision and personal directions in life. Direction, singular, in life. How did this ever happen, and how can you recognize and happily resume your singularly unique journey? The story of Dr. Wood Baker, number one. The experiences we offer you at the Emergent Life Center are based on the teachings of Dr. Wood Baker and his wife Marie, who practiced medicine in London at the end of the 1700s. Dr. Baker, a man of short sentences, was pithy, sharply focused, direct, and to the point. His sentences were declarations. He was tall and slim and capable of playing a role or acting a part, and making people think his motives were entirely different than they were. Number two, Dr. Baker was a very forceful, independent, and challenging individual. But he had a very light touch when it came to medicine, and was very popular with his patients because he related so well to their thoughts and feelings and desires, and to each patient's way of life. But he's a great bluffer, and if he didn't have the knowledge he needed, he seemed to quickly improvise it. Well, of course he didn't really make up the knowledge he needed. For as a young man, Dr. Baker had learned the secret of direct perception in the Orient while traveling with his father. This secret minding is known today as imagination, and you will experience the secret of direct perception minding at the Emergent Life Center. Dr. Baker was minding knowledge from the universe to treat his patients. While other physicians treated only illnesses and the symptoms of illnesses, Dr. Baker and his wife Marie, who he had met and married in Asia, use imagination to understand and treat their patients with the illness and symptoms, such that people coming to be healed by ordinary medicine were helped by Dr. Baker and Marie in unique and unusual ways. But these patients felt that was all right because their fears and mental pains and illnesses were certainly relieved. His fellow physicians condemned him to be a charlatan and a hoaxer. They thought he was providing unapproved medicines and treatments and advice that only offered temporary relief and which, in the long run, were detrimental to his patients. They accused him of harming and undermining the medical profession through corruptive practices, and they brought him up on charges before a board of governing physicians. Well, he replied in defense of his ideas and treatments, if what I do is so wrong, yet the results are right, can you truly say that what I'm doing is wrong? And if my patients are healed, can we not say that maybe, just maybe, what I'm doing is right? And if your patients are not healed of their illnesses, though the symptoms are sometimes relieved, can we declare them?
Can we not declare then
with some degree of certainty that what you are doing is wrong? There's nothing your parents still will not submit to. There's nothing your patients will not submit to, and there's little you've not done to them in the name of easing their pain and discomfort, restoring their energy and health, and even in saving their lives. Well, how have you succeeded? Well, let's see. We've examined, poked, and prodded them unmercifully, and when that did not succeed, you invaded their body and rummaged around inside. You rubbed, squeezed, distorted, and tormented them, but seldom did you ever stroke, massage, soothe, or comfort their suffering mind and feelings. You've twisted, rotated, and manipulated their limbs without success, except to irritate and aggravate their ever-worsening condition. They've even allowed themselves to be half-drowned, frozen in ice, almost boiled alive, steamed in hot gases, roasted in stifling ovens, buried in hot mud, seared and cauterized milk with red hot irons, and if that wasn't enough, they were singed, roasted, toasted, and almost smothered to death. They've been sensitized, brutalized, and stupefied. They've been dehydrated, rehydrated, then dried out again and again until they shrink. You've made them retch, cough up, excrete, discharge, and void their insides, so you can make them swallow, inhale, or otherwise ingest all sorts of abominable medicines and so-called miraculous cures. Then they've been dipped, drained, and made to pass off their blood, sweat, tears, and other bodily fluids and vital secretions, either willingly or by way of cuts, drains, probes, and even leeches. Then, well, you made them pay for all of this as if it was a wondrous privilege and blessing conferred upon them by God.
It's the religion of medicine.
Well, no doubt about it. The assembled physicians were outraged at Dr. Baker's words, as well they might be, and they would not listen any further, for they, not him, were to determine what was right in medicine and the way it was to be performed. And of course, if a patient died, that was the patient's doing or undoing, not theirs. They were administering things correctly. And if Dr. Baker reversed some of life's processes and helped long-suffering patients, it was only because God, in his infinite mercy and wisdom and goodness, had granted them his grace and a severance from Dr. Baker's wicked healing practices. They declare that God had looked upon his victims favorably for a while, but truly so, they would surely succumb. The Board of Physicians declared it was only God's benevolence and mercy and forgiveness, in essence, that healed his patients, and had nothing to do with Dr. Baker and his wicked treatments that they ever survived for a short time. The board condemned the wild and insane things he was doing. They accused him of dispensing unproven and ineffective potions, following untried treatments and improperly speaking to his patients, and giving them false hope, and improperly telling them to deal with themselves and their lives. And they determined that Dr. Baker's practices were evil. Throughout the trial, Dr. Baker got an even clearer and stronger and happier picture of himself and his treatments. And yet at the same time, he felt overwhelmed and unfairly persecuted by life. For he was only trying to help his patients and relieve their suffering. Now, as a result of his caring and good works, he was suffering terribly and unfairly. But instead of turning from his patients and seeking relief, Dr. Baker turned to his loving wife, Marie, who offered him great comfort and strength and assurance. She brought even more patients to him, and at the same time she counseled them and offered them her own form of healing and nurturing. For in a previous come alive life, she had been known as the Great Mistress. Grand Mistress. And later we will tell you Marie's abiding story as the Grand Mistress. Dr. Baker had the technical abilities, while Marie calmed patients' fears about their problems and illnesses and the uncertainties that were created when the other physicians publicly branded Dr. Baker a charlatan. But soon, only grievously ill patients came to their clinic, patients who felt they had no other choice because other doctors could not help them. And Dr. Baker felt that his ability to heal people or give them any help at all was lessening and lessening and lessening. And though many of his patients were completely beyond standard medical help, and even though there were miracles at times, or healings as he called them, Dr. Baker felt that his abilities were gradually slipping away. And the other physicians pointed to that as a sure sign from God that what they had declared was true, that Dr. Baker was most certainly a fraud and a charlatan, and matters worsened and worsened. And though friends and colleagues turned away, Marie did not, and she did not lose faith or confidence in her husband, in his understanding, in what he was teaching and showing his patients, or even what he was demonstrating to other doctors and to their patients. And even though his abilities seemed to weaken, Marie never spoke with any less love and certainty about the things he was doing. She was unwavering in her beliefs and words that his treatments were quite right for other physicians, for her husband, and for, above all, right for his patients. Marie offered their patients great assurances and frequently spoke of their wondrous self and destiny in life. But Dr. Baker was never quite sure whether the cures were his or hers. Together they healed patients, one nurturing and treating physical bodies, while the other awakened and soothed their conscience and selves, the essence of their body and soul. Through all of these problems and conflicts, Dr. Baker found great joy and meaning in his life in discovering that he could bond openly and completely with someone who so closely matched his own ways and strengths, and who, at the same time, so affectionately offset his weaknesses. Their communion created a great oneness without conflict, a union with God, and a faith in his benevolence and in all of life. So in a way, the court was right, for God did seem to be helping Dr. Baker and his patients directly. And the joy and pleasure he experienced while still suffering under the illusion and problems and sadness of what appeared to be failing health in others lessened in his practice and abilities, and in the condemnation of his peers arose from the love and security he discovered in his relationship with Marie. He found his home, his love, and his way, and he continued life without feeling he had to force things to happen, for he saw that it was truly the combination of her love and his medical knowledge, her feelings and attitudes and ways of dealing with people, combined with his convictions and skills, that provided the strength and power to heal. Their individual talents and abilities were not in opposition, nor did one have to be held back in any way for the other. And as the two worked as one in that way, great results occurred and miracles happened. Dr. Baker even healed patients who had been grievously harmed by other doctors and their vile habits and medications, which inflicted additional pain and suffering, created greater illnesses, and frequently hastened death. He and Marie helped many of these patients and cured some almost instantly. You today have the same ability to heal yourself in life, regardless of the events and difficulties that have occurred. And no matter the progression of the illness or disease or problem, but you should never mind, you should never avoid seeking proper medical advice from trained physicians and doctors. Dr. Baker and Marie's strengths and abilities are wholly within you today. In essence, you can follow them both. The partnership is available within you in this lifetime to awaken, experience, and feel, to know and follow, to heal your own body, self, and life, and our Emergent Life Care Center can show you how to enliven and release these abilities through imagination, should you choose to do so. You have a great capacity to take things as they come, or as they happen to you. Listen for a while, understand what you feel these events and relationships and illnesses are revealing to you. Gain strength and courage and assurance from your knowings. Conceive of a plan and idea and inspire yourself by that. Then successfully and satisfyingly proceed to heal yourself and help others understand their own problems and illnesses and enrich yourself in the process. Several years ago, a short manuscript of Dr. Baker's writings came to light. We would like to read the last part to you. These are the words he spoke to his patients about their lives and their illnesses. Since the very beginning, every attitude, every thought and word, every action and reaction, or every event and relationship you have ever experienced has been carried in consciousness in your soul. And from that, you have proclaimed your life, your body, your health and well-being, or your illnesses, disorders, and disabilities. In each lifetime, you, through your everlasting soul's continuing attitudes and experiences, establish soul, the pattern of yourself and life, and your physical body. And your soul precisely constructs that body, self, and life through your inner design, quote genes, or in parentheses genes. Your physical body self and well-being are patterned by, and you are a confirmation of all you have ever thought or believed about yourself and life and others. Your body and well-being are shaped by your beliefs, thoughts, attitudes, and emotions, and everything you have ever said and done, and they are clear expressions of all you hope to be. What is your self-image? What do you appear to be and desire? What is the essence of your body self and your life today? And as you look at yourself today with new understandings and insights, do you regret the past? Are you fearful of the future? Are you disheartened in any way? Is your self-portrait encouraging? Everything you have done today is because... Everything you have today is because you have chosen that and acted upon that. And it has been lovingly granted to you by God. And everything you do not have is only because you have not chosen that and acted upon it. Are you happy with your choices and life? Do you like what you see and have experienced? Or would you like to change things and begin again? As the Master Jesus said to Nicodemus, "Verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man born of water and of a abiding spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of God. If you haven't rebirthed your body self and spirit to abiding, you can right now start over and develop different events and consequences, different thoughts, different attitudes and images, and an entirely different picture of yourself and life. You can do things that are much better and finer and lasting today, and far more desirable for yourself and others. You can be more sincere and concerning and more involving and caring all the time should you choose to do so. You can be more complete, understanding, honest, and compassionate with all individuals and things, with your words and actions in every situation. And with your life and well-being today, you can carry all of that with you into your future. But all too often you want to heal the past, to change and alter. You want to correct, relieve, or release the image and feelings and actions and the undesirable events and relationships you previously lived into your body and life, which you are now experiencing and struggling against. You have a tendency to want this in most situations and relationships in every part of your life. You believe you can release the past or be released from the past and be forgiven. And you expect me to provide a treatment that heals things and yourself. You want forgiveness. Yet you continue creating the same problems in your life and in the body of your life. And then little by little, you expect me to cure them. You save your errors and inappropriate believers.
You say of your errors.
And inappropriate believers or beliefs? Oh, it's believers, I guess. They are minor little things. They are not important. You hope that by ignoring or changing or healing matters one at a time, everything will be well and you will be forgiven and all will be better.
Can we go back to that?
Inappropriate believers?
Yeah. Is that really correct?
Let's see.
You save your errors and your believers. It could be.
I would say that it's inappropriate beliefs.
Yeah, because the believers would be other than something else.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next paragraph. But your soul, the inner pattern of yourself and life, carries these old events clearly written within itself exactly as they happened. Typo. Happed. It could be happed.
Old English.
And they cannot be disposed of or changed or healed so easily. And by constantly being concerned with the past in this way, you continually limit yourself, your well-being, and your life today. And you unalterably repeat the same mistakes, or you make them worse and carry them into your future. It's time to concern yourself, your life, your body, and your well-being with today's new awarenesses and devotion, goodness, inspiration, faith, and blessings. Leave the past to heal its own wounds and bury its own dead. That was from the 1700s. Well, that's the end of these words to Dr. Baker's patients. And speaking of your soul, Dr. Baker is referring to your genes and DNA pattern, which certainly is an eternal aspect of you that records and carries a record of every belief, thought, attitude, emotion, word, and action of yourself into the future. To heal yourself, to say, you must leave the past behind. Learn from your personal present life and change your thinking, feeling, and ways right now. Give your DNA, soul, and body a new and greater, more desirable images and matters to carry and live, as Rashid did for Arif. Later, we will tell you of Brother Ball, who was the abiding entity that came alive as Dr. Wood Baker.
No kidding.
It went
click, click.
Oh, perfect
timing.
Yeah,
it was like perfect timing. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Not me.
Are we at a breaking point here, or what are we at?
Well, Misty's
we got another half hour.
I think we should continue.
You want to read, Karen?
Sure.
All right.
Do we want to make note of Misty's, the typos for her?
I'll do it on my copy digitally.
There was a...
It was what, believers? And
believers and hapt.
And there was one in this last paragraph.
Oh, really? We will tell you a Brother Bowl paragraph? What does it start with?
Change your thinking, feeling, and ways right now. Need your DNA soul moving your body in greater, more desirable image. Give your DNA, soul, and body a new and greater and more desirable image. Singular.
Okay.
Scooch. Okay. So we're going to look at Rashid and Arif.
The Overture.
The Life and Legend of Rashid and Arif.
What page is that on?
Overture.
392.
You are really moving right along.
We're moving right along. 21. As you listen wisely to these emergent life stories and follow your eternal abiding self in life, and deeply observe, listen to, and understand others as they truly are, you will be transformed beyond yourself in your life today, which will bring you even closer to realizing and living the joy, empowerment, and opportunities of heaven on earth, and many limitations, such as fear and doubt and unworthiness, will pass away as you actualize and live the physical well-being of fulfillment, enrichment, and happiness, which are constantly offered to you through being and living as an eternal abiding being. But you must unite with and enliven your abiding self today, for you will be served only to the extent that you serve yourself.
Your voice kind of whipped without it partway through.
It did, didn't it?
The big voice again.
The big voice. 22. Nothing is as important and vital to being and living as an eternal abiding being embodying these emergent life ideals and standards. For nothing will inspire and guide you as quickly and profoundly as seeing and experiencing yourself and completely living your abiding awareness. It is useless to speak of wise and truthful beliefs about you in an abiding self and emergent life, if these promises of life are not fully embodied in your own life today. 1. Most profound and life-enhancing understandings are frequently perceived and grasped directly, intuitively, not through language. Two. Our travels into emergent life will take us beyond your loner body self and life today to your eternal abiding body self and life. To prepare you for this portion of our journey, we have prepared more eternal abiding journeys of others to tell you. Though these abiding lives may not seem extraordinary, if you listen carefully, you will discover they are extremely unusual and certainly worthy of being continued eternally. Rashid and Arif. This first abiding self and life story began almost 4,000 years ago in the land known today as Iraq. It was during the time when Hammurabi conquered this area of Mesopotamia and established the Babylonian Empire, which became the cultural and commercial center of the region. But many people of the area still lived in crude huts made of stone or sun-baked bricks and gathered in small, isolated villages. These people remained fiercely independent, fanatical in their beliefs and ways, and extremely hostile, and were responsible for many large-scale raids and massacres in neighboring farming communities, for raiding was frequently the only way they could avoid starvation.
One day, a stranger arrived at a remote Kurdish village built like a fortress in the foothills of a great forbidding mountain. Now, today, this wouldn't be cause for any concern or alarm. But in those days, few strangers ever came to a village because surrounding high mountain peaks, rugged trails, and nearly impassable gorges made travel through the area extremely hazardous and difficult. And the village was far from the normal trade routes. The stranger's journey began in a far-off area known, even at that time, as the Land of Genesis, or the beginning of civilization. The stranger's name is Rashid, and he's on a sacred quest, a dedicated and holy quest, and for that reason, he came alone to this sacred mountain. And since he's an older man, traveling this harsh land without companions or protectors, the villagers are sure he is mad. Though he seems to possess an unusual and unswerving confidence in himself and in what he's doing. So they're not quite sure. Well, they weren't certain until he announced, "I've come to seek out the fiercest and cruelest man in all the villages, of all the villages in the Highland region. I want to meet an individual with a savage and violent nature and spirit, a truly ferocious man who takes what he wants and doesn't hesitate to kill all who stand in his way." The old man waited for the villagers' reactions and suspicions to subside before he continued speaking to them. "I've been searching for years, and I haven't found anyone strong enough or violent enough. But I've heard about a fierce warrior named Arif, who's said to live in this land. Is he here?" At the mention of Arif's name, many villagers shrank back in terror, just remembering the horror of his last rampage through their village. These people were long accustomed to fierce and remorseless individuals and their vicious cruelty. So upon seeing their terror at the mention of Arif's name, Rashid was certain his quest would soon be over. "I want to meet Arif," he shouted to the crowd. But no one would even speak of Arif or say where he could be found. "I'll pay well for a guide," he offered. But again, no one answered him. So Rashid, feeling discouraged and disappointed, turned to move away. Suddenly, out of the silent crowd, one villager grabbed Rashid's arm and said in a low, hushed voice, while secretively looking all about, "Old man, you must climb the sacred mountain to the very top, and there you'll find many such cruel and terrible men." Then his voice dropped almost to a whisper, and he spoke with great fear and trembling in his voice, saying, "And the fiercest one of all is Arif." The man quickly ran away and hid in the crowd. Rashid looked at the tall, forbidding mountains all around the village, then turned back to the crowd and again asked for a guide. "I'll pay well," he shouted again, and showed them the coins in his hand. But no one would help. No one would guide him. He'd have to climb the rugged mountain alone, not knowing the way. Rashid sighed deeply, wearily, and called upon his inner master to strengthen him for the terrible journey ahead. After many exhausting and bruising days of climbing, Rashid reached the mountaintop stronghold and announced to the thieves he found there, "I've come to teach you the laws, the rules, the ways of peace and justice, and as a gift, I bring you Hammurabi's code, which was received directed from the sun god, Shamish. This code offers Hammurabi's guidance and protection to everyone, and rightfully guards the weak and poor, including men, women, and children, and even slaves against injustice and wicked men. It's the written code of our sacred land, so the strong will stop oppressing the weak, and the weak will no longer deplete and exhaust the strong. It will bring peace and justice to your lives, to everyone, and it will awaken a new spirit in you." And will it protect you, old man? Arif bellowed threateningly. Truly, sir, Rashid answered nervously, you must understand. I've been given a charge in life to find the greatest, the villainous individual I can find and become well acquainted with that man or woman, should that be the case. Though it's unlikely it would be a woman. Arif laughed savagely, interrupting Rashid's words in mid-sentence. And when he thought about the old man even considering that a woman might be the fiercest, he shouted, Not here, old man! He scoffed at the very idea. Not here. And certainly not while I live. I'm the greatest. I alone, he boasted, and laughed again. And as Arif's renewed laughter silenced his own bragging, Rashid continued, I'm to give that man, you, Arif, an opportunity to change your life. I'm to help you reform yourself, to change everything about your ways and actions. Arif raised his hand to interrupt, but the old man wouldn't stop. For if it's truly possible for one such as you to change or realize the true spirit within you, then obviously it's possible for anyone in the land to change and live anew. Pick someone else, old man. I don't want your code or advice. I'm too busy. And I'm certainly not going to change. So change some dimwit who believes you. Someone who doesn't know the truth of life. Someone who can't live his own life. I'm too busy. But if we took an inferior or weak individual, Rashid protested gently, a poor person, one with few opportunities in his miserable life, and said, change, here, I'll help you, he would instantly want to rise up and better his life and relieve his burdens and problems, or one who is sick would certainly seek a cure. But of what value would that be? What would be learned by that? But with you, Arif, well, now that's quite different. The old man had Arif's attention now. That was certain. So they sat down together to continue their discussion. The other men who had gathered to watch Arif butcher the old man for coming to this retreat were dismissed. I'm beginning to like you, old man. You've got strength and courage coming here alone, Arif declared with an unusual amount of admiration in his voice and manner. Then he waited in silence to hear more of what Rashid had to say. But if we took the strongest man, one who had everything going his way in life, someone who is strong and healthy, someone like you, Arif, and offered that man a different life as sort of a resurrection from the one he'd previously created for himself, well then, Rashid looked intently at Arif before continuing, well, then, if we allowed him to be quieter and calmer and more peaceful, and he mastered these things and became more enriched in different ways, other than through power and fear, then it was reasoned that everyone in the land would change and live peacefully and healthfully under images and understandings from the gods. The old man smiled at Arif and continued, And so, it's for that reason I've come to your mountain to see you. Oh, I've met and talked with many men on my search, but none were fierce enough, great enough, or successful enough as you. Arif smiled broadly at these words because he knew he was the greatest of them all, and he loved the praise. Your name was frequently mentioned, Arif, so it seems you've been selected as well. You've been chosen by the gods. So my journey, lifetime after lifetime, my quest is nearly complete. Here on this lonely mountaintop, it ends with you, Arif. And yet my journey now begins with you. For it seems that our divine destinies are intertwined. Well, old man, what's in it for me? What do I get out of this? Let me ask you a simple question, Rashid began. What would you be willing, least of all, to give up? Arif laughed. That's an easy question, old man. My life. I'd be least willing to give that up. Yes, my life. Why do you ask? Well, if that's so, would you fight for your comrades? Of course I would. And if you were killed, have you not given up your life? Arif looked a little puzzled, but he answered with great pride and assurance, Well, of course. But I'd be fighting for them out of loyalty, just as they'd fight for me. And if I was killed, well, that'll be an accident of fighting, or, well, a summons from the gods, or a hazard of war. But I'd never give my life directly. I'd never offer my life directly. I value that most of all. For what's there in life without my life? And yet, Arif, if you were to have life above all else, just like your life here today, Rashid paused and looked all around at the sparse and lonely conditions on this cold and windy mountaintop, then turned back to Arif, saying, You have life above all else, and little else, so what do you have? We have very little, that's true. But I'd go about, just as we do now, and take whatever I wanted. Oh, I'd get it, surely. I'd know where it is, and I'd take what I want. But that doesn't matter. I'd have what I want. And others would lose their lives fighting against me. I'd win. Arif was breathless with excitement, but he managed to continue, almost choking out the words. So you see, old man, you can't trick me. Be very careful. You can't trick me like that. I won't fall for your crafty words. I'm too clever for you. Well, truly then, Arif, you're certainly a wise man, a very wise man indeed, are you not? And again, Arif laughed at his own cleverness and answered, Wise? I'm wise above all your words and understandings, old man. Because I know these things to be true, while you only speak from learnings and teachings, or from the words of others. I've taken care of myself for a long time, a very long time indeed, through many dangerous battles. I know a lot about life you've never even seen. I've learned to be self-preserving, not self-sacrificing. No one looks after me. They're too busy with themselves. Well, Arif, would you give yourself for another? Rashid waited, smiled, then continued, If she were beautiful. Oh, Arif sneered, Now you're playing with me. Are you trying to make a fool of me? Well, no matter. Let's see. Would I give myself for another if she were beautiful? He repeated aloud, considering the question. You certainly make a man think, old man. Well, if you mean my life, well, no, the answer is no, I wouldn't. Then he added with a sly smile, though I might be tempted. And in saying that, he smiled broadly, remembering, and I've often been tempted. But I was able to fight off that weakness. Then he added, you can't tempt me like that, old man. Well, what would you give your life for? Rashid asked, seriously. Anything? Arif considered the question carefully and pulled at his black beard before answering. For he was certain Rashid was trying to trick him again, and he was in no mood for that today. Well, certainly, he began slowly, there must be something. Yes, something. But what? And what would I have if I gave up my life, he wondered out loud. There must be something, yes, something, but what? What would I have if I gave up my life for anything in life? He didn't really expect an answer. He was just thinking out loud. So Rashid asked another question. Arif, is there any way for you to realize that only by giving up the life you lead today may you have a life above all, may you have life above all else, above all things? Arif had to think carefully about that. He was certain it was a trick question or another trap. So he began speaking very slowly and quietly. The life I lead? Give that up? You mean all I gotta do to have a great life and everything I want is to do something different? Do other things? And no one could stop me or interfere? Well, truly so, Rashid said. That's part of the answer. Aha! Arif shouted gleefully. Then I fooled you, because if I did that, I wouldn't be giving up my life, would I? Well, no, I guess not. But would you not really be giving up all the things you hold dear in life? Wouldn't you be giving up all the challenges and goals you've set for yourself in life, and all the words you've spoken before? Your beliefs about life, and your harsh ways, and your comrades, and your life on the mountain? And wouldn't you have to give up all the things you've enjoyed and sorrowfully done in the past? Wouldn't you have to take a new and deeper breath of life in life and change your attitudes and feelings and your actions? Wouldn't you have to give those up? Well, yes, Arif reluctantly agreed. I guess I'd have to change. I'd have to give those things up. So what? But Arif, if you give up all the things you are and have in life, well, wouldn't you be giving up your life? No, so just stop right there. I'd still be alive. And at that very moment, couldn't you create a new life within this life? A new way of founding and discovering and revealing yourself? A new way of being and expressing yourself? And wouldn't that, in fact, be giving up your life? Arif chuckled at the old man's words, and his laugh grew louder and louder as he realized how easily he'd been tricked again. He was beginning to like this old man, or at least respect him. He's slick, he said to himself. Then, turning to Rashid, he declared, "Old man, I like your ways. You're trying to get me to say that my life is only the things I have, the things I sense and feel, and the things I've done. And you're saying that without those things, there'd be no life for me at all. And in giving those things up, I'd be giving up my life." I'm going to pause.
So you guys can keep going until you finish the story so that we're done with it.
Okay.
Besides, you'll lose the gist of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you stop in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be back probably before you finish the story.
Right.
Yeah, you can
bring
the walker to get from here to there.
Yeah, I like hearing
the
story.
Yeah, I know. It's a great story, isn't it?
Yeah, it reminded me of the conversation Pat had yesterday about giving up his eternal self.
Mm.
Or giving up to the eternal self. Just reminded me of that.
Watch TV. See, I knew. Woohoo!
This one of your clients too? They gave you a copy? You didn't know all the hit people on the
island. He's a Japanese dentist.
Is the recording still on?
Misty's recording?
Yeah.
We'll start in just a sec.
It's all our conversation.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
I don't know how to stop it. I don't know how to stop it.
Gummy bear?
You
was quite thankful. He was quite thankful.
Is Andrew's out there, hey?
Yeah, sitting in the car.
It's a little pocket. Oh, you can put some like bread in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you guys come back, we'll keep reading.
Yes.
Yep.
You don't get credit like unless you're here.
I must know. Yeah, good point.
And you're saying that without those things, there'd be no life for me at all. And in giving those things up, I'd be giving up my life. But I'm too wise for you, old man.
Wait.
Go. I could change my life today, this very moment. I could give it all away in a whisk. I could do things completely different and be quite happy and satisfied with that. Then I challenge you to do just that, Rashid said defiantly. I dare you to change and find a new master in your life. A master other than what you have taken from life so far. I'd ask you, and just who would be that new master be? Arif countered suspiciously. You, I suppose? No, not me, Arif. The master is the one who survives all things in life. That's no answer, old man. So I'll ask again, who's that master? It's the one inside of you that you'd begin discovering. It's you, Arif. You're the real master. Inside of me, he laughed. I'd find the master inside of me? And I'm that master? Now you're trying to trick me. Because if I'd find the master within me, then I already have the master. And I don't have to change. Arif was certainly satisfied with that answer to the old man. Yes, that's true, Arif. It's given to you to know these things and to know you can please that master. So he'll reward you and give you what you really want. Like a beautiful woman? If that's what you really, really want, Arif. If that's what you want. But be careful of what you ask for. Because the master is listening, Rashid warned. Well, the conversation went on this way into the night, and for several days. Many things were discussed, and many beliefs were brought out to be examined. Many awarenesses and misunderstandings were talked about, until Arif, deciding to trick Rashid, said, I'll go along with you, old man. I'll do whatever you ask of me, because I like you. You're tricky, but you're gutsy. And just to show you, here, I'll lay down my sword. And Arif threw his great sword on the ground. And my knife. I won't need them again. My master will protect me, so I won't need my leather coat either, or my shield. I won't need these things to protect me from life's dangers. I throw open my chest to the great master within that you say abides within with me. And I open myself to all that is outside of me. I'll give up my life for me, truly I will, or for the master within me. I'll go with you. Just do just as you say. I'll give up my life. Arif paused and thought more seriously about the last promise. Oh, all right, I'll give up my life. And still not liking the sound of that, he added, Well, I'll give up my life for someone, as you direct me, old man. I'll give up my life for you, or a master, or for a new life. Well, those were his words to Rashid. But inside, he was planning to trick the old man. He was going to go along with Rashid, and in the end, when it made no real difference, and life hadn't really changed, he planned to shout, See? I told you nothing would happen. Nothing would change. It's all the same. You were wrong, old man. And after several days of rest and preparation, Arif and Rashid took a secret trail down the mountain had returned to the village. And where before people laughed and pointed at a reef or ran away in terror, this time they were curious. For a reef didn't have his great sword or his curved knife. And he'd left his shield and protective leather on the mountain. And he wasn't glowering and shouting at everyone. Well, he wasn't smiling, but he wasn't threatening them either. And Arif sensed that the trick he was playing on the old man was causing him to enjoy his own life even more than before. So he laughed a lot and enjoyed others' curious stares. And Arif sensed that the trick he was playing on the old man was tricking him instead. And when they left the village, they continued traveling to other places, teaching and preaching about the goodness and greatness of life that is within everyone. It only had to be awakened and enlivened. And they taught that anyone can change his nature and spirit to be as he desired being. Well, no one laughed or made fun of Rashid's words while Arif was around. He was an enormous man, almost 7 feet tall, 323 pounds. And he secretly enjoyed living in such a great body, speaking about spirited matters, not threatening things in life. And he really enjoyed others' curious looks, and they certainly paid attention when he spoke of his new life and ways. Gradually, Arif sensed he was giving up his old life completely. The old terrified individual he had been was changing. He found a new person inside of himself, a master. Just as the old man promised, he declared, and he was profoundly surprised to hear that individual speaking words he'd never heard before. And seeing himself doing different things and feeling great about himself and his new life and ways. Oh, there were problems and difficulties, but he met those with a completely new sense of himself and his life, and certainly without his old anger and frustration. Life was richer now and such a joy, and he laughed even more. Arif and Rashid shared many talks and intimate events. They learned together. They helped people and constantly asked them, could you not change your very life and spirit? Would you be willing to give up everything you are today to discover and have a great new life and companion? A great master or grand mistress? Sure I would, they frequently answered. Tell me what I can have, and then I'll give up my life for that. Well, I will if I like what you offer, and I want that. And time again, Arif explained, it's necessary, first of all, for you to take the chance and change yourself as we have said and done. Quit struggling and move smoothly and evenly through life and discover the greatness life holds out to you. And give others all you have to offer, just as you would willingly be and live forever and ever. For that is truly so. Don't be afraid to change. Don't hold back. You'll have help. Oh yeah? Who will help me? Someone asked. Who will guide me? Protect me? Who? Son, Arif answered. He was beginning to sound like the old man, but he kind of liked it. If you'll give up your life, as I've asked and as I did, I promise you'll discover everything I now have in my life. And what's that, Arif? What have you stolen now? And though the man was challenging Arif and mocking his words, Arif spoke calmly, with an assurance that caused the man to listen and not interrupt again. If you'll change and follow the direction offered by my companion, then whatever you choose to do, whatever you choose to believe, whatever you choose to have, life will be there as a servant to wait upon you and give you strength, beyond even the strength of the greatest warrior. And I know that's true. And Arif continued, your new life will give you the knowledge and understanding beyond all the learnings and teachings of wise men. You'll gain a caring more wonderful than all the affection and love you've ever experienced or ever sensed. Your strength and well-being will be assured, and life will guard and secure you on all sides better than the finest protective leathers you've ever worn. Even if you dressed yourself in those leathers all at once. Son, I've thrown off my leathers and shield and my knife and sword, yet ever am I better protected and strengthened now. That's good enough for you to say, look at you, Arif. Who'd dare argue or fight with you? But I'm just a little guy, and I don't have your size or strength. What about me? Well, son, Arif interrupted, you cannot live your false self and serve the master within you at the same time. You must choose one or the other. You've struggled all your life to serve your false self as I did. And what have you really gained? Do you have the self and life you really want? Don't you really feel different than who you are pretending to be? I certainly did. Who are you really? Do you even know that? It's certainly not who you think you are, as you've been told again and again. And you are greater even than you sense yourself to be. Don't be afraid, son, Rashid added. What Arif's asking isn't so difficult. You only have to stop being led by your false self and your false beliefs and attitudes and feelings and give yourself to the master within you, and life will offer you everything you truly desire and act upon. I promise you that. Rashid gestured to Arif and continued, look at Arif! You knew him before. Has he changed? Is he different? Does he have a greater life? Think about it. Think hard about what we've said to you, for this is a sure sign that everything we've said is true. Well, many of the individuals Rashid and Arif tried to teach wouldn't listen. Oh, they saw and heard how Arif had changed, but they didn't believe and wouldn't give up what they had, even if it was false. And they didn't believe that, not even to gain a greater enriching and fulfilling life, for they were not yet desperate enough. And Arif was greatly concerned and saddened to see them turn away, for he knew they would continue struggling in their false self and life, as he had done for so many years. And some even tried to test him. If I can have this better life you speak of, give me some money and show me where I can buy it. I'm ready. You must discover the master within you first, Rashid repeated. Then that life will be revealed to you. Oh, how they laughed and laughed at the old man. And Arif was sorely disappointed because he knew Rashid's words were true. And Arif was so unhappy that later the old man asked, why did you risk all you had before this new life and now give it all away? Arif was puzzled by Rashid's words. I don't understand. What do you mean? I didn't give anything away. Well, when we started, you gave yourself much joy and pleasure, but now you are disappointed at what you see in others. Can't you find happiness in them and in their actions? Remember the man last week who wouldn't listen when you told him that to have the true life he wanted, he only needed to give up his present one? And when you saw him continue struggling and fighting and carrying on with his old life, and you knew he wouldn't change, it grieved you so. Couldn't you have found happiness in his choice and in his life? How can I find happiness in that? Arif asked a little too defiantly. He's the same guy today as he was last week. Nothing's changed. And he'll be the same tomorrow. And every day after that, he'll never change. He'll go through life in the same way, doing the same things, forever complaining. Nothing's changed. Nor will it. Nothing matters except his miserable little life and desires. He's better than that and deserves more. How can I ever be happy about that? But Arif, don't you realize that your words have raised doubts and questions and uncertainties in him? So no matter how he tries to continue his old life as before, and oh, he will try, someday he'll discover that our words were true, and that's exactly what he must do. And someday, well, he'll do it, and he will praise your words, though he'll believe them to be his own words. Well, we could tell you of all the events one after another that occurred in that life. We could speak of the great strengths and joy Arif gained, the knowings and understandings he carried within him when he gave up his judgments to live a new spirit, and not continue as he was born and taught and preached to. And we could tell you of the blessed and fulfilling life Arif had as he discovered and lived the Master within him. Many years later, as Rashid lay dying, Arif held him tenderly and cried softly and deeply, for he truly loved the old man. And Rashid, looking devotedly and tenderly at his beloved companion, said tearfully,
"Oh, dear one, before I leave you, I must confess. I tricked you.
I made you feel important. I enticed you and offered you such a life by saying you could have all that with little changes here and little changes there."
You skipped a line. I gave you a sense of awareness.
Okay, I'll start again. "Oh, dear one, before I leave you, I must confess, I tricked you. I made you feel important. I gave you a sense of awareness and sureness about yourself. I enticed you and offered you such a life by saying you could have all that with little changes here and little changes there. So you see, dear friend, I tricked you. And I'm so very, very sorry for in doing that. I took away the life you had, and I took away the power you had. I took you away from your friends and companions and their comradeship. Oh, I took so much from you and gave you so little in return. Only this mean life traveling with me, and for that I am, oh, so very sorry. You gave up your life for me. Please forgive me, for I love you dearly, old friend." Well, Arif was crying intensely, inconsolably on the inside, and, well, sort of laughing as he said, "Oh, dear Rashid, please forgive me, for I have these words to say. I tricked you. Years ago, when you came to the mountaintop, I said, well, I'll let him change me, or I'll let him think he's doing that to me. So you see, I tricked you. I took away the good life of study and understanding and teaching others you could have had just to be with me. For your life of great purpose and fulfillment, I give you mine. And all along, I was tricking you." But oh, Arif could hardly believe what he'd truly discovered about himself since meeting the old man who climbed to his fortress so many years ago. And he could not have known what would happen when he agreed to give up his life for this man and the master within himself. And the tears streaming down his cheeks and falling on his beloved dying companion, he sobbed. "Oh, dear old friend, I offered you so little, and you gave me so much in return. And though you feel you've done so little to make my life worthwhile, I now know that friendships in life, or one true friend, if that's all we find, matter most of all, no matter how or who it is that allows that, or gives us the opportunity. That's the greatest thing we shall ever have in life, and for that I thank you, dear friend." Arif could barely continue. "And in giving up my lonely life on the mountain, I've discovered my true self, and joy and happiness beyond belief with you. But I found that only because you gave me the courage to give up my old life and everything I had, even the things I held most precious and dear at the time, You showed me how to give up my life for another and discover my master within. You promised me a marvelous life and new spirit, and your words were true. I'm so very happy and thankful for that. The old man looked up and smiled wondrously and whispered, Then, dear Arif, I go to heaven, knowing that together we've lived the finest life one could ever have imagined. We've each given the other all we had to offer, and in doing so, we've also given the other the greatest, most pleasurable life ever. Oh, dear Arif, there's nothing you could have offered me of all the world that would have given me more joy than having spent so much of my life with you. And for that, oh, I am so deeply happy and thankful. And with those words, Rashid died. And when Arif saw the gentle smile on the old man's face, he was instantly relieved of his deep pain and grief. He was filled with the joy they shared, and he tenderly and lovingly dug a grave. Do you understand that to an observer, Arif was still Arif, acting different, but he was still Arif. But he was actually an entirely different person in Arif's body and life, and was no longer Arif. He had completely changed his identity and become a new person. Yet because he looked like the same old Arif and had Arif's memories, this new abiding person that was still called Arif did not know he was really Arif. Your life today is not about spiritualizing the physical world, nor is it about discovering God or becoming one with God or bringing God alive in the worldly universe today. You can continue living and struggling with your perishable body self on life that was created for you as it was for Arif, as a come alive gift, and struggle eternally to become who you truly desire being as Arif did, or since your come alive self and life enables you to participate in the world around you and know and experience yourself in life, you can regenerate or rebirth yourself as you truly desire being and living, as Arif did, with Rashid's guidance and support. You have the Emergent Life Center for guidance and support. So, what about your life today? Are you still living the personal loner self and life you were born with that's not even you? Or have you companioned with an abiding self and life, like Rashid, and found the abiding master or mistress within you and become an abiding being?
Thank you.
Well read.
Hmm. What made you so emotional there? You know?
Being beside the old man as he was dying.
The loss of a good friend.
It wasn't even the loss, it was just the tenderness of being with the old man while he's dying, which is what we're all doing here.
Well, we don't know that.
We're all dying.
Well, we're all gone, yes. Mm-hmm.
And he's... It's that's not the point, it's just the tenderness of the acknowledgement of all that he had given, which is, I mean... ornery old sod that he is, Roger has given us all so much, and that's why we're here.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely.
That's the way I see it.
Yep. Well read. Don't need to.
And Rashid, I'm sorry, I fell asleep a little bit. Did Rashid find himself?
You need an napkin?
Yeah, always eternal.
Oh, good for you. Just stop.
What do you mean? I don't think he was lost to himself.
He wasn't lost to himself.
Yeah. He was eternal. He was abiding to start with.
The story here is, as it summarizes at the end, that it's Rashid is Arif's abiding self.
Okay.
And they communion and look what they developed together. Mm-hmm. So that's the simplicity of it all. But it is, I guess, can you say that our abiding self is just as willing to come and work with this the personal being self. It doesn't sit back there uninvolved. That if we open up, our own abiding self is just as willing to actively be involved and commune. It's not just sitting up there somewhere and we got to coax it or something or other. Mm-hmm. And then they get a bit emotional too. It's that partnership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really neat.
Mm-hmm. So what if, allow me the word, what if Roger were an illusion and this is a dream and he's our abiding eternal being for each one of us? I mean, you know, that's just the connection I was making through the story.
Like, yeah.
The message, not the person.
Which
the
one is he? In the story?
Rashid.
Yeah,
I would say. Yeah.
He sounds much nicer in print.
Yeah.
Recording's still on.
Yeah. I'm just saying. I think everybody understands what I'm saying.
He would say, don't.
Yes.
Kind of lost something in translation.
Yeah, right, exactly. They can't fully capture what he's like. Yeah.
Mm. And I had a conversation with Roger about reading. Can't remember even which part of this that had come out ahead of time. And I told him that I had had a really deep emotional reaction. I was brought to tears reading it. And he said, "Good, that's what I want to happen."
Mm-hmm.
And it was. Conversed a little bit more about that, and it was, it's when you make those emotional connections is when you're actually communicating directly communicating minding with the concepts and the ideas.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I didn't do that yet. Interesting.
Wow.
That was always one of my favorite stories.
Yeah. Yep, that's quite powerful.
I remember it from years ago, around 2000, but I never read it again. I've always had it as a save to read again. I never read it again.
Did you know the story?
Yeah. It used to be on the old website they had before it went and crashed. And they restarted it again. I have it somewhere. Now you have it.
Servius was also a new one to me.
Yeah, that's actually new.
Mm-hmm.
New to everybody.
And I like that really much.
Yeah, me too.
Organizing as a library, the memory.
Seeing the change of light, connecting each one, direct perceiving that. That was very illustrative of the new stuff.
Huh.
I wish he'd do some more stories in his newfound, you know, way of illustrating.
He's writing a dream book.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's the next thing.
Oh, I thought he never was going to do that. Oh, well.
He didn't start with writing. But it's up here.
Mm-hmm.
And keep him alive.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Was he dizzy before?
Dizzy?
Yeah.
I don't know, today he was lopsided after the massage, so I don't know what happened.
Well, I mean, the lymph drainage often wipes people out, but also he lay there flat on his back for a long time, which is kind of, I mean, it'd be tough on his back a little bit, so I just went and put pillows under him, but he's not used to lying there, and it's bright light and the sun and stuff. It probably really knocked him out.
He doesn't walk. He only walked from here to there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Misty said he's like that sometimes in the afternoons.
Yeah.
When he wakes
deep
up.
Sleep.
Something.
And lying on that, like, with his back, with his legs flat, probably.
Just
I mean, one
like
day he didn't came out until 12.
Yeah.
It just seemed
then
like
he was busy the whole afternoon.
Yeah.
Seemed like his center of balance was just shifted one way today.
Yeah.
Oh, it's interesting because he did so much better after the massages yesterday.
I think he was just really deeply relaxed and had got into a very deep sleep.
Mm-hmm. That's where all your body does its healing. I know. Yeah. He's probably making up for years of not enough sleeping.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. He's gonna die.
We used to have the 2:30 club, and that was a gathering where the group. The small group that would stay up till 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, Elena was here.
Yeah, she was. In here or out there. Uh-huh. Whoever could last the longest and get up again at 6 or whatever. 7.
He was the last and the first in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Who's got a dream? Bullshit! That's crap shit! Yeah.
Wow, look at Andrew over there. He's gonna sleep his whole life away.
Yeah.
He just throw those hand grenades across the room.
Yeah, that he was. Yep. Whoever woke up first got conscripted to trick Andrew into something.
Really?
Yeah.
Those are good almonds. I like those.
He first checked. Remember, he'd go to bed at night first. And then one of the first things, and I was usually one of the first ones up, he would.
Finish the story?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Did you talk to Andrew last night? He'd ask, you know, did you talk to Andrew?